Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with Tyler Sanders and Ethan Huffnagel, our executive assistant to the regional producer. Switchcast is the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. And in fact, we prefer that you're not a car nerd because then you won't catch us on our mistakes and missteps.
Which we make very few of most of the time in the right light.
Probably. Oiling the air conditioner compressor on an EV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
that was an interesting one. Anyway, let's see. We're giving the audio listeners a few extras, and we're going to start with a warm-up lap, which is exclusive. This is not on YouTube, so just catching up on a few things. One of which is Donald Trump, who was recently inaugurated, reinstitutes TikTok. How is that automotive related, you may ask? Because we have a rule here: we don't talk about politics unless it is related to cars. Well, it is related because, well, we're on TikTok and we make money off TikTok doing car content. So we're like, oh, well, shoot, we're going to lose that revenue stream, as worthless as I believe TikTok is.
Yeah, it's really not. It is.
And it got banned because of, I think, a law passed by Congress or a congressional act that said because they're a Chinese-owned company, it's an issue of national security, and so they cannot operate in the U.S. anymore. So they either have to be sold or cease operations. Well, they did not sell, so as of January 19th, they ceased operations.
For like a few hours.
Right.
Wasn't it? And then it was just magically back. And the message why they were gone like changed so many times. I don't know what was going on.
The irony was, and we talked about this irony before, is the CEO put out this message talking about, you know, constitution and free speech and all that, which is just, it's just so rich when I hear that, because I'm like, bro, I have gotten demonetized and videos removed and censored so many times by TikTok for stuff that is harmless. I don't swear. I don't rage bait. I don't do any of these things that should get people removed. I'm not insulting people. Like, I'm just out there being a, you know, warrior for truth in the car industry and, you know, some good jokes. And they shut me down. Driving in a car. Oh my gosh, it's dangerous.
Driving in a car is very dangerous, Doug. What if you don't know what you're doing? Everybody else on the road.
So I just think it's funny that he's standing on the First Amendment platform when they're the worst violators of that. I get it. They're a private company. They can do whatever they want, but it's just, it's ironic. I also don't like that any president has enough power that they can just sign a piece of paper as an executive order and say, this is happening. That's a problem.
I agree. Regardless of which side of the aisle you're on, I feel like that just kind of circumvents the whole process and system.
Right.
That was set up. Not a fan.
Right. Checks and balances. Yes. Well, everybody's doing it. It's like the old DC Talk song. Everybody's doing it.
Who's, you know, doing what my it? Mom would
everybody's
say, Doug?
Everybody's doing it.
If everybody jumps off a bridge, are you going to jump after them?
Well, yeah, if there's a river underneath and it's like a good time. Sure.
I'd be too scared. I hate heights.
Let's see. Carvana stock is back up.
And I don't think this is related, but Hindenburg Research is disbanding.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So it says a personal note from our founder on their website published January 15th. Yada, yada, yada. I've made the decision to disband Hindenburg Research. The plan has been to wind up after we finish the pipeline of ideas we're working on. So I think they're done, but it's just kind of...
Is the fund related to them done? Like, are they holding their short position? Are they bankrupt because Carvana went back up? Is this a short squeeze? Is this...
I think it's just kind of done.
Interesting. Wow, I feel like we need to dig into that a little bit more, but yeah.
So tune in next week.
I still think the red flags are there. I still think there's some problems. I don't 100%. Think they're going to go bankrupt. I think there's some problems, but their stock is just right back up in the 230s again.
Ugh.
I missed a deal at auction this week. I missed two deals.
Two?
There are great deals out there. Meekum Kissimmee happened last week. And, you know, thousands of cars sold at the auction. And of course, when there's that many cars, there's deals to be had, even though, you know, all the record-breaking sales are touted on TV as being,
Sure,
sell your car, get all the money. A 1998 Viper GTSR, which is one of 100 commemorative editions of the Viper GT2 race car, all made in white with blue stripes.
So hot.
Yeah, that's on my short list.
Oh, because that would be a special Viper, I think,
for
right?
our challenge. Yeah, which we need to expound on more. We won't do that now. But there's a challenge where we have to buy something that we've been talking about buying by next April. We started this 3 years ago, and I haven't got one yet. Tyler hasn't gotten one yet, so we're down to and 2 months.
This is my year, Doug.
Yeah.
I did go.
Well, it has to be.
I did go look at the Mecum website and search for 996 GT3s and got so startled because I didn't realize I was searching all of them because I saw this gorgeous midnight blue one, but it sold like 5 years ago.
Oh, yes.
I was like,
yep. So anyway, these typically go for 130 to 150 grand for one with a moderate number of miles and like upwards of 150, close to 200 for a collector mile one. So I was at the bar with my wife and I see on TV, $100,000, the bid goes on. So, like, that's their version of reserve not met. I was like, oh, wow, I should check that out tomorrow and see, like, I'm like, 100K is way too cheap, but I wonder what the reserve is. I'll check it out. Log in the next day. Sold for $112,750, which is inclusive of buyer fees. So, essentially, it sold for 100K.
Wow.
I'm like, what? 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 Which that means the seller net, like, 90 grand.
Gosh,
which
that
is
hurts.
Way below wholesale for a GTSR. It's not even in the ballpark of wholesale.
That's painful.
Like, if he had called me up, I would have been like, oh, why are you like 120 right now? Thinking that's a lowball offer. And he got 90-ish in his pocket.
Ooh.
But he got his car on TV.
He sure did. A lot of good that did him.
Big price to pay.
And all that did was waggle it in front of your face, too. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Anyway, if you do enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. Like, subscribe, share, leave a 5-star review. All of this helps us out with AI and all the things, SEO, IMS, all the stuff that helps other people see the podcast that we don't have to pay for, and you don't either. Please also support our sponsors. The links to our sponsors are in the show notes, and the show continues to be free for the meantime for you because of their generosity. So, our main topic here.
Let's go. All right. So in capital letters on top of this press release, SRPD stops driver impersonating police vehicle. That stands for San Rafael Police Department.
And I got excited because I saw an F-body Camaro with CHP badges on it. And I'm like, all right, let's talk about the line between owning a vintage police car and using it and getting arrested for felony police impersonation.
Yes. So let's catch the listeners up on what happened here. On Wednesday, January 15th, 2025, SRPD officers arrested Matthew, a 25-year-old Richmond resident, for impersonating a police officer while driving in a vehicle modified to resemble a police car.
Matthew Bennett Connolly. Come on, call him out. It's in the press release.
At 10:40 a.m., officers on patrol in the area of Bellum Boulevard and the Interstate 580 overpass in San Rafael observed what they thought was an older model California Highway Patrol Chevrolet Camaro police car that had been used by the agency nearly a decade ago. I'd be so pumped to see one of these in person.
There are departments that still use quote-unquote vintage police cars in actual service.
Oh,
there's a couple
so
Mustang
sweet.
SSPs. Florida Highway Patrol does have this generation Camaro
really?
That they use in service. I've seen it in person.
This gives me some like Need for Speed high stakes vibes.
Yeah. So spoiler alert, this is important because when people talk about it being a vintage police car, like, oh, they should know it's not a real police car. Well, not necessarily. Some of these departments do still have one or two as like the token, you know, vintage police
exactly.
vehicle, and they are in service.
Which is a nice segue into what happened next. At first, the officer thought it was an actual CHP car and waved towards the driver. While waving, they noticed the driver was not wearing a uniform and did not appear to be a CHP officer. Officers became suspicious and made a U-turn to inspect the vehicle further. The driver must have been crapping their pants. They noticed that even though the CHP decals on the doors looked official, the vehicle did not have the proper license plates and was not registered with the state law enforcement agency. The officers made a traffic stop of the vehicle, believing it was a person impersonating a police officer and illegally driving a vehicle falsely marked as a police car. During the investigation, the driver admitted to placing decals on the car and acknowledged that the public would believe it was a police car. He stated the vehicle was for a car show. However, officers determined that it had not been used in a car show since it had been recently removed from an impound yard for expired registration. SRPD contacted the CHP and advised them of the incident. SRPD officers also investigated whether there had been recent reports of the person or vehicle being involved in false impersonation cases. Connolly was arrested for falsely impersonating a police officer and booked into the Marin County Jail. The vehicle was also impounded.
Again. Right back to the impound yard. Say, send her back.
Did the the decals couldn't have been on it the first time, so this was a recent thing.
Yeah, the driver admitted to placing the decals on the car. So there's two very opposing camps, right? Kind of opposite ends of the spectrum as far as opinions on this. A lot of people are like, oh, it's an old old show car. Like, what does it matter? They're not using it anymore. People have vintage police cars all the time. Leave them alone. And then there's the other side of things where you have the collectors of vintage police cars who follow the rules going, hey, don't ruin this for everyone. And also people that just don't want to be like afraid of people impersonating police officers.
So what are the rules? Because I have seen a bunch of Mustang SSPs and like, you know, everybody sees the Crown Vicks with the bull bar and the fog light. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about like in period recreations.
Well, or we could or be talking not, about that.
We the, could.
There's
yes.
a lot of gray area depending on that. There's okay. I want to back up a little bit because you're saying like, what are the rules? Well, the rules differ state to state,
naturally,
wildly. So this is not a legal opinion on can you do this or can you do that. This is an observation based on experience. I have personally owned three different fully marked ex-police cars and one unmarked ex-police car. So I have a lot of experience with dancing on the line of legal versus not legal. And I've done a lot of research in doing this. So this is based on my opinion, based on experience. This is not by any means legal advice. But there's a lot of interpretation. So there's the state law and or local laws, and then there's how the cop's feeling or what he observes,
yeah.
right? So you could have, for example, the first ex-police vehicle I had was a white Crown Vic. It was fully unmarked, but we put antennas on it. It had the spotlights. It had the blacked-out grille, the stainless steel wheels with trim rings. It absolutely looked like an unmarked police vehicle, but there was nothing illegal on the car itself. Every single thing was legal to have by itself and in combination, right? So even though it looked like a police car, it wasn't, and there was no word saying police, there was no red and blue lights, there was nothing actually like making it look like a police vehicle. However, if I had used the vehicle to initiate traffic stops or try to arrest people, then they would say, okay, this is, you are using this and people's understanding of it looking like a police car in order to impersonate a police officer. So they would get you based on the use, even though there's nothing technically wrong with it. Then there's the other side of it where you could have a fully marked 100% functional police car, which I have had three of, and I have driven them on the street. They have functioning lights and sirens, red, blue, marked with police, marked with the agency badging. They are real police cars that used to be in service. And I have not gotten arrested and gotten permission, not just because I didn't get caught, but I've had permission from police to use it in this manner. So what did this guy do wrong? Probably just comes down to California's rule on it, right? Because he didn't have lights on it. He didn't have anything other than the sticker. And that's where people were like, oh, who cares? It's like a vintage police car. He wasn't like pulling people over, running strobes, whatever. Some states are super strict with their laws. I am reasonably sure that Ohio State Patrol or Ohio Highway Patrol has copywritten their logo. And they will not even like license it out to people wanting to make Hot Wheels. So you never see model cars of the Ohio State Highway Patrol. Florida is one of the craziest ones. They have a law against using their color scheme, which is black with a cream top. So you cannot, if you're a private citizen, you cannot own or operate any vehicle in the state of Florida that just has that particular paint scheme.
It's very cut and dry. I kind of appreciate that. Like, regardless of maybe it's less fun, but like, just don't do it.
Like, yeah.
It makes it also probably easier to spot cops.
Sure. Absolutely it does. But it's like, I mean, that's kind of crazy because a lot of states use black and white. And it's like, well, you can totally have a black and white car.
Yeah.
But yeah, Florida is really, really strict about that stuff. So they'll paint over when they sell a police car at auction, they'll paint over the cream so that the person buying it isn't immediately breaking the law. So there's a broad spectrum of what's really legal and what's not legal, and it depends on the state. When I bought my Mustang SSP cars, I did a bunch of research both with the SSP forums. SSP stands for Special Service Package. That was the police-equipped Mustang Fox bodies back in the 80s and early 90s. 5-liter V8. A lot of them were stick shift. They were an awesome, awesome police car.
So cool.
Back when cop cars were cool. And that was the case with this Camaro, too, right? Like, this Camaro that got pulled over, it wasn't a B4C package, which is the police package Camaro, but there were F-body B4Cs. Like I referenced earlier, Florida Highway Patrol used them. Super cool cars, and all of us kind of car nuts think it'd be cool to own an ex-police car that we like remember when we were young, just had our driver's license, whatever. We remember getting a ticket in that car, right? So collecting vintage police cars is a thing. So there's a big group of guys that restore these Mustang SSPs. They research all the particular radios and lights and all the proper equipment and restore them back to stock. And they also are very particular about the laws for use. And they're kind of on one end of the spectrum, like bordering on bootlicker, right? Like they just love cops and, you know, love obeying every single law related to these cars, which is like, granted, it's when you're driving a fully marked police car and you're not a cop, there's a saying, don't break the law when you're breaking the law, right? It's valid.
Yes.
But I think they take it a little too far to the point that like I did a burnout in my own parking lot with a police car, with my Mustang SSP, with lights and sirens going, and I essentially got blacklisted from the group because I was like giving people that own these a bad name and all that. And I'm like, I'm in my own parking lot. But anyway, back to the legality of it. So what I learned, at least for Ohio, was there's a bunch of laws regulating these things, but again, it comes down to interpretation. So what my experience was, I could have a fully marked lighted up police car if it was clear that it was a vintage car, right? So you drive like a 1950s Chevy ex-police car, nobody's going to pull you over for police impersonation because it's absolutely clear this is not a police car.
Yeah,
a Mustang SSP, maybe still on the line.
I think
right
at this
there.
Point, it's pretty obvious that's not a cop car.
Maybe, but
it's not a chunky Explorer.
Okay, probably, maybe. Then there's laws regarding markings of even the word police, right? It's illegal to have the word police on your car, to have the logos. So typically you would have to tape over them when you're in transit to or from a car show. Same thing with red and blue lights. There's very specific laws in almost all states saying that you can't have those types of lights on your car, even if you don't use them. Now, the cop that I was consulting with on this said, well, shoot, we got people with like LED strips and LED stuff all the time that can be red or blue. They just program it. And it's like, well, are we going to arrest people for having red or blue underglow for police impersonating? No, but like, so there becomes this interpretation of like, how are you actually using it? Are you using it in a way that is presenting yourself as a police officer? And so he said, like, listen, I don't think you're going to have a hard time with red and blue lights on your car if you're not using them. Like, if it's patently obvious, like, this is a vintage police car, you're going to a show, you're not pulling people over, you're not being an idiot, you're not bloop-blooping them to get them out of the left lane. Yeah. Like, nothing. You can't cross any of those lines, then you're fine. And that was kind of the general gist I got. So more often than not, when I was driving locally, I would not cover anything up. But if I took long trips, I had a bag that would go over the emergency lights that would say, not in service. Keyword there.
Yeah.
Right. So that's also how, like, if somebody, a mechanic, is transporting a police car or test driving it, or a police car is getting transported from the factory or something, you'll see them sometimes driving in convoy and they'll say not in service. So it's kind of one of these safeguards that you take to just not get hassled by the cops. Because it's one thing to get hassled, it's another thing, like this guy, to get felony impersonation.
Yeah, it just goes back to the don't break the law twice. Don't do stuff you really... Make sure you understand the rules, the regulations, laws of where you're living, and don't be an ass.
And well, and don't downplay it either. So there was one up for auction, I think, on Bring a Trailer, and either the commenter or the seller, when asked about the legalities, like, oh, it's fine, I just drive it everywhere, it's no big deal. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
It probably is a big deal. Right? Like, driving a 50s police car, no big deal. Driving an SSP that maybe could be construed as a real one, especially with functioning lights and sirens, you got to be careful. So take your precautions. If you're going to do it, it's a really cool hobby. It is fun owning an old police car, taking it to car shows. But man, cover up the friggin' decals. Don't be running like strobes and crap.
Yeah.
Put not in service there. Just like, make it clear to the police that you're not being a threat, because the really big important part of this is not like the gray area of I'm going to a show and I was too lazy to cover these things up. It's the people who are actually impersonating police officers and causing problems for people. And I binge watch these people on YouTube. It's ridiculous. It's also ridiculous how confident they are when they get pulled over by cops and they continue the ruse of like, oh, no, I'm a federal agent. And they start berating the cops and telling them what to do. It's amazing the gall that some of these guys have.
Wild.
So, yeah, if you're going to own an old police car, do your homework, because every single jurisdiction is different on how they regulate these things. And when in doubt, play it safe. Cover your stuff up when you're in transit and just don't take the risk of getting hauled into jail because you get the wrong cop and he decides to throw the book at you. Because, I mean, technically, I guess any police car operating on the street with those types of markings, like this guy found out, he didn't have strobes, he wasn't doing anything, he was just driving with stickers on and he got hauled into jail. So better safe than sorry.
I tell you, this has got me looking up old Camaro police cars, like the old Irocs from the 80s with the big old, like, a bunch of lights on top. Oh,
there's a really good, hot. I think it's CHP SSP on Bring a Trailer right now. Really good one. It's going for cray cray money. On that note, let's move to the shrewd negotiator. This is people on the internet typically trying really hard to get the best deal or get the better of somebody in some vehicle negotiations. And, well, this is an interesting one. It's a Chevy HHR SS for sale on Facebook Marketplace. Now, when I was researching this post, I casually asked my wife if she knew what an HHR was, because I wanted to read her this post, and I was like, do you even know what an HHR is? And she's like, yeah, the ugliest car ever made.
They're not beautiful. Classically beautiful, I'd say. You could probably have an eye for them, but
no. She also laughed at like the American thing, because in the post, you'll see he calls it an American car. So forget the fact that the HHR is made in Mexico, but apparently Aaron did a research paper in college that showed that foreign cars were typically more American than American cars in terms of their parts content.
100%.
So she's like, no, it should be called assembled in America, not like an American car, but whatever. Can't tell this guy. So 09 Chevrolet HHR SS Sport Wagon, $6,800. And he has a sticker, it looks like, on his custom airbox with a skull on it and a big yellow warning.
That's what I'm talking about. The HHR owner right here.
Corvette energy right here. Warning, this Chevy HHR SS comes equipped with a 2.0-liter Ecotec intercooled turbocharger engine.
No, 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 Doug. It was bolded turbocharger.
That's true.
In your face.
SS was also bolded. Yes. Can't have a regular HHR. This turbocharged engine produces 260 horsepower. This sport wagon will do 0 to 60 in less than 6.3 seconds. I think a Ford Taurus will,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, seriously. Wow, bro.
And reaches speeds of 150-plus mph.
Same also as, like, bold. Most cars today. Even then.
Wait for it. A trained professional driver must operate this vehicle at all times. If you can't handle this, all caps, American muscle car, please drive a foreign car.
Absurd. He's got a boomer board, 100%. Takes it to shows. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
So let's talk engine swaps.
Oh, goody.
We did an episode a while ago about whether or not car mods add value, which is pretty easy answer. Typically not, right? Some do, some don't. Definitely not the amount that you put into them. You never get that back. So it's really a matter of, are you getting 10 cents on the dollar or negative dollars?
Usually negative.
But let's talk full engine swaps. And not just like random engine swaps, like I dropped an LS into my FD RX-7, which is cool and arguably better because that rotary engine is not the most reliable in the world.
Nah, it's worse.
What's worse? An LS is worse than a rotary?
In an RX-7, absolutely.
But it sounds so good. Well, the rotary
sounds
like
pretty a Corvette.
Good too.
You put an LS in something, it just starts sounding like a Corvette. The rotary is a part of the heart and soul of the RX-7.
Okay, fine. Bad example. Let's talk about, like, the IMS Special 911s,
nope.
M96s.
Worse. You take the flat six out of a 911, it ruins the 911. It just sounds like a Corvette. Just go buy a C5. It'll be cheaper and more reliable.
Okay.
Sorry, I got fired up.
All right. Whew. Well, how about batteries?
No, get them out of here.
You put a battery...
Absolutely not. That's even worse.
Okay. Which is worse? Putting a battery in an air-cooled Porsche or putting an LS in an air-cooled Porsche?
Battery, 100%.
The market disagrees with you.
Well, thank God I'm not the market.
Okay.
Nor do I have enough money to participate in the market.
Let's look at the third option, keeping it stock. So for this segment... We're looking at, this is amazing that these came across my plate all in the same week, because there's any number of engine swaps that are done to 911s. And of course, one of the big topics is the M96 and M97 engines, because they're consistently failing from bore scoring, IMS failure, water pump failure, oil pump failure, whatever. Right. So people do like the Honda K20 swaps or K24 swaps. There's apparently an Audi diesel swap that's like literally plug and play, or an Audi V8 swap as well. I don't know. Somebody messaged me and said that you could do like a V8, V10, whatever, or A10 or something. I don't know. So
what
many codes
heck?
And stuff. And I don't know if they were a typo, but I got offered a lot of different engine swaps when we were talking about the Cayman that we had with bore scoring. So that's a well-known one. However, I got offered, not offered, I came across two separate 1970s 911s with two very different swaps. And I think this is important to discuss because they're both 2.7S engines, or 2.7S models, 2.7 flat six, also known as the Smog Special.
Oh,
probably
yeah,
one of the worst Porsche engines ever made, or 911 engines ever made. The 928 was... that was a bad V8. So we have the least desirable 9/11 in the 9/11's lineage.
Is that less desirable than a 996?
Well, by value, no.
Yeah.
Sorry. But by like general, I would say that there's a lot more 996s. So maybe like overall, I don't know. I'd rather have a 996 than a mid-70s 2.7S. We're going to offend some people here. Sorry.
I know you've offended 928 owners and 2.7S
owners. I'm just being honest about the engines in 928s. They're crap.
Yeah, they're not
they
great.
They run awesome. They're fantastic to drive. Porsche screwed the pooch on that one.
I'd put an LS in that. That's fine. It had a V8 anyway. Like
LS and a 928.
Totally fine.
Absolutely.
Sold.
Absolutely.
The other one I like, thoughts are flowing. The Audi 5-cylinder that you can put into 944s. That's cool.
Mm. What about a Volvo 5-cylinder?
Oh, yeah, I do. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I don't want... I'm so over LSs and 944s.
Okay. Yeah. It's passe. Okay. So I'm not blaming anyone that has these cars. Honestly, I'm blaming Porsche because as much as we love our Porsches, that company has screwed their customers over many times by building bad engines and, leaving the customer to deal with it. So, we're looking at a 1974 Porsche 911 Targa EV conversion that closed on P-Car Market this week, and a 1976 Porsche 911, also a Targa, LS swapped with the Renegade conversion kit. Now, Renegade is a company out of Las Vegas that has been around for decades. I used to go tracking with the owner of that company. They're pretty well known in this space for doing good swaps. Like I said, their brand name. So this 76 911S Targa with an LS swap done by Renegade, 70,000 miles, 80,000 miles on swap. I think that means on the other engine. Clean title, Targa, great shape, transmission is smooth, car currently does not have working AC. Wow, that comes with a swap. Exterior of the car is in great shape. They are asking $36,000, which is an unfortunate negative return based on a stock 2.7S, because a 2.7S Targa goes for in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $60,000 for a clean example retail value. So
you have already brought up one of the things that I dislike about this that I feel like it's fun to ignore on the internet is there's always something that doesn't work or that isn't right. Like, of course the AC doesn't work because it's like just in it. Some of those things can ruin the enjoyment of the experience. Like I remember, and this is not me saying anything about the quality of the swap, but I remember back when Hoovy was doing his LS swap on his 911. They had to put in another tack because something just wasn't communicating right. You know, it's been years. And like, yes, it's like fixed that car that the engine blew up. But now you have this like weirdo tack, like just bolted onto the steering column. And something's just not right.
Right.
Some people might not care. Honestly, maybe this is a me thing.
I agree for sure. It adds complexity to the situation. Although the AC never worked awesome in that era 911 either. It worked, but it was not awesome. That's where I would say, like, I agree with you that the OEM Plus is the way to go.
Yes.
Right? You do a more better.
Yes, a, more like, better.
if you have a company that's known for building the engines or rebuilding the engines and fixing the weak points in them, that's the way to go. Or like, oh, instead of a 2.7, I'm going to drop a 3.2 liter in from a later model because they're fairly plug and play in most of those situations. That's kind of where I would go with that. But that can be also quite expensive. But so anyway, we've got an LS with a negative return. And then we have a 74 911 Targa EV conversion in like a bronze color. And the seats are from a newer model, kind of okay interior, pretty good exterior. It's got the cheapo basket weave wheels. And interestingly enough, like both the front and the rear are taken up with battery stuff. So you lose some practicality. You literally, you don't have a trunk anymore because there's just big silver box in there.
That's okay, Doug, because the type of person who's buying this is not buying it to use it for any sort of road trip. They're buying it to cruise around Los Angeles and posture.
Well, you can't use it for a road trip because the manufacturer of this conversion, EV West, says it should provide around 120 miles per charge when driven normally, and less, of course, when driven spiritedly.
I'm sorry, what? You know the thing you're supposed to do with a 911, Doug?
Drive it
spiritedly?
Yeah. So let's say blood like 80 miles. Up. So like one, you know, one little road
You take
trip.
This up into the canyons over there, you're going to get stuck. Oh, no, this isn't South Carolina. The photos made me think it was in California. Hey, you're going to take it to the mountains in the Carolinas and get stuck.
Take it to the Smokies. You can't. You just can't.
It's going to die halfway through the tail of the dragon.
Oh, my goodness. So this is a surprising result. I mean, it costs this guy far more than this to do the conversion. However, the high offer is $52,500. So an EV swap in a 911 Targa 2.7 is worth more than an LS swap in a 911 Targa 2.7 by a significant amount.
I'm just reading a comment right now, Doug, that says, how easy is it to change the horsepower settings? I hate everything. Why do you need to ask that? It's just, hate all.
That's the other issue with the EV thing, right? So not only are you changing the balance of the car, it says it adds about 200 pounds to the car, although some of that's up front, but like, whenever you add that kind of power to a car that wasn't designed for it in the first place, you have to change everything else. And it does not appear that that was done in this case. It's got to be a real dicey car to drive if you have the full power settings.
Yeah. Well, and I just feel like this is the type of person that will buy this is the type of person that wants a Tesla, wants an EV, that they just want to look like a 911, but they want a bad car. They just like, I don't know this. I don't know who is going to buy this. The dynamics are compromised. That's why we love our Porsches. That's why we put up with all this stuff is because the driving dynamics are wonderful.
Agreed. And the seller said, somebody asked, how fast will it go? He says, it'll go as fast as you want. And I'm like, I don't want to go that fast in a pre-crumple zone, pre-airbag, whatever, you know, tiny like, brake. EV 911.
It's not my thing. Now I acknowledge that this is a potential avenue to keep some cars on the road that were otherwise past it. You know, like if the engine has blown or if there's some significant issue and this is the avenue you want to take, I acknowledge that is like kind of great, but it ain't for me. I think this is just absurd.
Yep. Well, we answered the value thing. An EV swap 911 is worth more than an LS swap 911, but they're both worth less than the original mediocre engine that Porsche stuck in there.
So the market doesn't lie.
But there's some company I keep hearing about that does like these bespoke EV conversions for air-cooled 911s. I think they're out in San Francisco. I could be wrong. And they're like $750,000.
I got it.
Which to me just blows my mind, and I'm like, I don't get.
Can we stop taking air-cooled 911s off the road to turn them into something that normal people can't afford? Normal people already can't afford them. Come on.
Are you becoming that boomer?
I think so. Like, Singers are gorgeous. They're incredible. The Gunther Works stuff is incredible, but it's all just like,
there's still thousands and thousands of them out there.
I guess.
It's a very, very small percentage that they're impacting. Are they impacting the value some? Yes.
They were impacted before that. People went bananas way
before. Sure. Well, it's because people are taking them off the road to do nothing with other than just say, I have a low mile car. So, like,
man, I got fired up this episode. I don't know what happened.
Whew. Jeez. All right, let's go to our ever popular license plate game brought to us. I really should hit him up for a sponsorship deal. It was a suggestion of Alan Hoover from Soul and Spine. And if your back's all jacked up, go see them. We got some license plates. The gist of the game is, as you guys probably know by now, is it one bite? Everybody know the rules? everybody does know the rules. One of us says a license plate, a vanity plate, of course, a special plate, and the other person has to guess what car it came off of based off of our ability to stereotype on the fly.
I think we have done a good job so far, Doug, of getting in the realm of, like, I don't...
I feel like we're 50% of even getting in the realm. And
did,
like,
I headshot one once? I feel like... Have I gotten one?
You've,
like,
gotten a couple.
Oh, man.
Yes, the now dropout one, Mercedes S-Class. You nailed that one.
I need to be humbled today, I guess.
Well, we're going to start with an easy one.
This is going to really humble me if I get it wrong. What is
it? All right, submitted. All of these are user submissions. We love them. Keep them coming. This was submitted by the Pooh Man on Instagram. Literally,
Taco Bell.
His avatar is a dog in the middle of doing his number two. License plate is... Power up.
Oh, that's an EV. It's a Tesla.
Yep.
Yeah. Whoo, thank God.
Also, the internet says there's no Z in Tesla.
Oh, do I say Tesla?
Yes.
Whatever. They can.
Anyway, so I'm going to just, I think I'm like, Tesla is as Teslas and vanity plates go together like ketchup and scrambled eggs. So I feel like I'm just going to give you a Tesla one, just an easy layup one every week. And, you know, because there's so many Tesla ones and they're all the same. Gas, LOL.
Yeah, I'm going to get one and put T-E-Z-L-A on it just to... All right, Doug, are you ready?
No.
This one is Bumblebee. B-U-M-L-B.
Oh, yeah. Is it a Camaro?
No, it's not.
Oh, come on. It's not the friggin' Iron Man edition, whatever Bumblebee. Not Iron Man. The
Transformers.
Transformers.
Yeah,
thank
no,
you.
Not that.
I don't
it
watch
is
enough movies.
A yellow and black 991 GT2 RS.
It's dumb.
I agree. That's why I picked it.
Should have been a Camaro. Okay. Got one for you from Dave Marr. Fried egg.
This is a 996 of some sort.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Good job. You're just laying me up this way.
All right. Yeah. Okay. A little bit harder one. Also from Dave Marr. Wide bod.
Is that a, like, a 993S, C2 or C4S?
It is not a 993S, but you're on the right track. Oh. It was on a 992. But it is a C4S, which means it is the wide body. I
but
was
aren't
like,
all the...
you better not put that on like a base 911 that's narrow rear end. So, all right, good job. Good
all
job.
Of
you're
mine
three
this
for three-ish.
I feel like these have been learned. All these this week from here from Adam W. Thank you very much. You've given me some gold to finally stack up to Doug here. All right, Chonker. C-H-O-N-K-E-R. Chonker. It's like it's spelling bee.
Don't even Cadillac Escalade V.
No, it is a 996 C4S. So it's in the wide body because it's fat.
Okay.
The wide body.
All right, all right. I thought the guy was talking about his wife or something.
Do you want me to go again?
Big SUV to haul her around.
Doug, I'm trying to pull you out of this. Do you want another one?
Sure. Right.
Bald Eagle. B-L-D-E-G-L-E.
Corvette!
So close. Late model Camaro.
I was, like, you didn't give me a chance for a second guess. I was going to say Camaro. Come on. I get half credit for that one. All right.
I agree.
Okay, speaking of pulling people out of things, Got Pink, submitted by Green Mountain Gearhead on Instagram. Thank you.
Got Pink. Is this like a... Is this a Corvette?
No.
Got Pink. What is... I thought of, like, the Barbie Corvette that was always pink. I don't know. I'm a Mercedes C-Class.
No. Mercedes G-Wagon.
Whoa.
Bright pink.
That I can understand.
Yep.
V10.
Audi.
No. I'm gonna give you another guess. I'll be nice this time.
Lamborghini Huracan / Gallardo.
No.
I feel like it's a car that you wouldn't expect to be a V10 and somebody's bragging about it. That's why I guessed Audi.
Oh, that's not it, but I do like that train of thought. It is this gorgeous green, I think late 90s Viper.
Oh, okay. Yep. All right.
So nice.
Cool.
It was like a metallic-y green. I can show you the photo later, but not the whole car was in it, so it was hard to tell the generation.
Okay. This one submitted by Brad Heppner with a note, quote, good luck, Tyler.
Oh, no.
FNCPNTS, fancy pants.
Is that on a, like, a Jag XF?
Nope.
A Cadillac CT4 or whatever.
Nope.
Oh, shoot. What is it?
GMC Sierra.
What?
It There's looks no like way. A Denali, but you know.
Oh, man.
It's local, too.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I got one more for you.
I knew you wouldn't get that one. So did Brad.
Yeah, that was rough. Lancerlot. LNCRLOT.
Mitsubishi.
Yeah,
Lancer.
But like which one?
I don't know, like an Evo something, some generation of an Evo. I'm sure it's an Evo.
I was going to try to make you guess
Evo
the generation.
6, 7,
it's a
10. 8, 10.
It's a 10.
All right. I get 90% credit for that one. All right. Maybe one of the craziest license plates ever. 370H55V. You can't visualize this, so I'm just going to say, if you put it upside down...
Do I need to write it down?
It spells something that, you know, everybody has, just like they have an opinion.
Hmm. Okay.
Everybody
okay. This is... Yeah. This is going to be a Jeep.
No.
Oh, because, you know, sometimes they're the, like, the ha-ha, if you can read this upside down.
Yeah, if you can read this and flip me over. Right. Yeah. That's a good guess. Yeah, that would be a good thing. Right. No. And this one, thank you, Ken Stevenson, via Switchcast Live for the submission on this one. This is on a Lamborghini Aventador.
Oh.
And apparently it got revoked. I think it was the state of Colorado that they had it registered, because after a number of years, Colorado figured out, like, oh, hey, if you put it upside down, it's offensive.
Would you look at that?
But when I put it into Carfax, it still comes back to the Aventador. So maybe, like... got it back or still has it? I don't know. So anyway, that's one of the neatest plates I've come across. Well, I don't know what that says about me. <That's>... This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. Here's a headline I recently came across on MalwareBytes.com. An insurance company is accused of using secret software to illegally collect and sell location data on millions of Americans.
Dun, dun, dun.
This may sound familiar. It's because it is. We covered when GM was doing this exact same thing last year, and they got sued for that and ceased to do it, or at least to do it without proper notification. So let's look into the article a little bit, and our software expert Tyler will weigh in on this. Insurance company Allstate and its subsidiary Arity unlawfully collected, used, and sold data about the location and movement of Texans' cell phones through secretly embedded software in mobile apps, according to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. Attorney General Paxton says the companies didn't give consumers notice or get their consent, which violates Texas's new Data Privacy and Security Act. Sorry, apps and acts here. Arity would pay app developers to incorporate software that tracks consumers' driving data in their apps. When consumers installed these apps, they unwittingly downloaded that software, which allowed Arity to monitor the consumer's location and movement in real time.
Yikes.
That'll be terrible for a cannonballer. Using this method, the company collected trillions of miles worth of location data from over 45 million people across the U.S. and used the data to create the, quote, world's largest driving behavior database. Allstate then used the covertly obtained data to justify raising insurance rates, according to Attorney General Paxton. Allstate is accused of not just using the data for its own business, but also for selling it on to third parties, including other car insurance carriers. Location and movement data is valuable for insurance companies when they are preparing a quote. By having insight in the driver's behavior, they can offer a rate that covers the risk better. Saying it in that way, like, they can offer a rate that covers the risk better. It's like, I feel like they can jack up your rate.
Well, and also, like, covers the risk better just means that, like, just makes me want to vomit. Some PR company came up with that.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, though, Attorney General Paxton is the same person who sued General Motors for the unlawful collection and sale of over 1.5 million Texans' private data to insurance companies, as I mentioned.
I like this person. We should empower them to do more.
Go get him. Well, power corrupts. However, so a lot of people think that we're like bootlickers because we've covered some things that the FTC has done, some other regulatory agencies have done that we have heralded.
Seriously?
Yes, or like the Montana LLC thing where I'm like,
that's
it's
wild.
Not worth getting sued by your attorney general versus paying sales tax on your car. Like that's a value, like the juice ain't worth the squeeze. And people are like, oh, okay, you're the guy that tells a teacher that we need to do their homework. And I'm like, no, I'm not tattling on anyone for not paying their sales tax. I'm just saying, if I were you, I'd pay my sales tax versus getting sued by the state, right? So anyway, I am not a fan of big government, nor am I a big fan of government at all. But I like a guy who, instead of suing its residents, its constituents, he's suing companies on behalf of their constitutionally protected rights.
Yes.
And saying, hey, you're violating their privacy. I kind of like it. I kind of like it.
I cannot imagine. The Montana LLC thing I sort of get. Fine. I cannot imagine somebody calling us a bootlicker because we're happy the government like actually did its job. Part of its job. You know, I just get really depressed about the state of technology today because it is no longer about fun, exciting, oh my God, I can store so many songs on this thing. It's here's how this thing can track you and sell you crap. That's like, or like make your insurance rates go up or whatever else. Like it is all just about profit and money. It was before, but it at least felt more fun back then. That like when the government can stick up for their constituents, or in this case, you know, the constituents in the state of Texas, like that feels good because a lot of the times I feel like the government's not trying to do anything about this. They're just letting the tech companies do whatever they want to do.
So obviously we can't weigh in on the ins and outs of the legality of this, but you are a experienced software engineer, project manager.
Oh yeah.
You've developed apps. This is your thing. How accurate is this? Like, what are they even measuring to say, oh, we're going to increase your rates or we're going to decrease your rates? Or do they even decrease anyone's rates? Do they only increase?
I guarantee you, Doug, that they only increase. There is not a chance that they're going to lower somebody's rates because of this.
What are some of the problems with just doing this without consent, or why did they think that they could do this? Like, have you run into similar scenarios in your line of work?
I have not run into similar scenarios because I mostly work with manufacturing.
Okay.
So it's not with a lot of end users. So you're not direct
to consumer.
Correct. I think, so it is amazing the amount of sensors that are in your phone.
Sure.
That can, and it's amazing, you know, we're starting to, you know, in the age of AI, learn how machine learning and processing of data can help you glean information or trends. And it's amazing what happens when you put pieces of data together. You can probably tell when somebody is driving, when they've picked their phone up, if they're scrolling on their phone, like there's...
While driving,
which, you know, for as much as
I'd
I want...
I'd be okay with...
For as much as I want people...
Can we just bill people automatically? Yeah. Like,
I want
hey, you're on your phone
ticket.
While driving. You've been fined $100. Choose to Apple Pay? Yes.
This isn't how I wanted it to happen, though, Doc. I wanted people to get pulled over and get tickets for it. But so it is amazing that this data that can seem like it makes sense for an app to need to pull... can be used to determine this and then sold off to make companies trillions of dollars, billions of dollars, you know, however much, doesn't matter. So the one thing I would recommend to everybody listening is when both Android and iOS both do a very good job of letting you know when an app requests permission for things. And my default is either no or only while I'm using the app. Because yep. There is no reason that Apple Maps or Google Maps needs to know my location if I'm not navigating. The whole point of the app is to navigate me or see what's around me. So if I'm not using it, that data is going somewhere. And I don't want to be like all conspiracy theory, but for the most part, we are in a world where people are constantly trying to sell us things or raise our rates for things that for insurance.
I would say take it a step further, and this goes back to our favorite book by Matthew Crawford, Why We Drive, which is really an exposition against modern technology taking over our lives. We are not the customer, we are the product.
100%.
So in this scenario, it absolutely shows that, right? We're the product, and they are selling us as data. They're selling our data. They're selling us as a product to companies.
And even before all of this, nothing is ever truly free. There's always a cost. And I think we lived in a tech world where it was just cool that stuff was free or cost very little. And now we are, I think, are seeing the back end of that, where our data is why things are so cheap. The other thing Android and iOS both do very well is give you indications of when your microphone, camera, and location services are active. There's usually little icons up in your top bar somewhere. That'll tell you, and you'll see them come up if you open up maps and whatever. Pay attention to that. If you notice it's on when it really shouldn't be, probably turn it off. It just means that I'm not saying that you need to put your phone in a Faraday cage and like never communicate. I use my phone all the time. I use it to navigate. I use it for stuff. But like, I'm cognizant of the companies trying to reach into my phone to glean information about me, to sell me things or to raise my insurance or to do whatever else. And I try to limit some of that.
In the name of giving you a good experience, right? Oh, we want to give you the things that you want.
Yep.
No, we want to influence your desires in a way that benefits us commercially. Yes. I'm totally the conspiracy theorist.
So there is a companion article on Ars Technica about this same lawsuit, and they called out specifically GasBuddy, Routely, and Life360 as other apps that were quietly tracking user data to sell to Allstate or to be a part of this. So it can be stuff that seems relatively innocuous. I'm assuming GasBuddy is to help you find good gas prices. The need to know your location to that, for an extent, but only when you're looking at it.
Yeah, I don't have any of those apps, so...
Yeah, neither do I.
I don't care about cheap gas, I care about good gas.
Yes, just go to a Shell. So yeah, this is... these computers in our pockets are amazing things, and I was growing up when they were really cool and exciting, and now they're just kind of cool and a little saddening sometimes. But you just got to be careful, because it's amazing what you can glean about a person... from data that seems like it's, you know, the identity's been stripped out of it or it's not identifiable or whatever. Like, yeah, you can figure some stuff out. So
what can they even determine, though, right? Because like GPS, well, do our phones have like a G-force monitor,
like an accelerometer?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I was going to say, because GPS triangulation is only accurate to within a few feet. So trying to determine somebody's driving behavior, like they're jerky or whatever, like you can't be that specific with GPS triangulation. So they're using the accelerometer in your phone to, okay.
Like, did it move? Did it, like, go up? Or, you know, what? I don't know exactly what accelerometer data looks like, but it knows the phone moved.
But could that even be accurate, right? Because you could be accelerating slowly and, like, chuck your phone to somebody in the back seat, and then they chuck it back, and, like, you're playing catch with your phone. In the car.
Doug, what do you do in the car? You probably shouldn't be doing that either.
I'm just saying, like, I think this way, right? Like, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm like, I kind of wish I would have been, because I'm like, let's poke the holes in it, right? So it's like, well, we raised your rates based on this data. Well, how do you know that that data was my car moving and not the phone moving within the car?
Well, and that's the, like, you're thinking of edge cases on a data set this large for the most part. That's going to get washed out and people actually just texting on their phone or like looking at their phone while they're driving. But the other thing is, like, it's not like they were telling people we're raising your rates because you picked up your phone 27 times in the past week and you maybe shouldn't have. They just raised their rates. That the transparency is also a problem, because I don't even think that you could have fought that, because you're not going to find like a customer service rep that has the information to tell you, well, sir, your rate went up this amount of money because your phone was just flying around in your car and we don't understand.
You suck as a driver. How do you know?
Well, it's like those, the OBD2 readers that I think, it doesn't even matter the companies, but
those
it was
were
like,
voluntary though.
Yes, but that was, it's like, we're going to lower your rates for safe driving. And all it did was track you.
As a joke, I wanted to get one of those OBD2 readers that tracks your driving habits and put it into the car during a cannonball and then call the insurance company up and just be like, so what do you think? Did I get a discount?
Yeah, I'm a safe driver, I promise. Yeah, so this is depressing on one hand, but on the other hand, it makes me so happy for large companies to, at least it seems like we're attempting to hold them accountable for being terrible.
Well, so. Texas is anyway. So I guess that's why people moved to Texas. I think this was the same guy. We won't go down this road because it's politics, but I think this is the same attorney general that has taken legal action against the federal government as well to attempt to protect certain constitutional rights or things that he believed were constitutional rights. And it may be more controversial. Again, not related to cars. So we're not going to go down that road, but this guy's on a tear. So, yeah, that's better. Again, better suing large companies and large governments than suing individuals like the states do to collect sales tax for people that
okay, Doug, got their cars.
No, I don't like that the states sue it, right? Like, I think there's a valid argument for the legality, the technical legality of these loopholes to title it in a Montana LLC. I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Because you have to fight those loopholes. And I'm like, I don't want to get into a lawsuit just over that.
No, so. When I think about the rounds of taxes that the money has gone through to purchase a car and then the further taxing, I get a little depressed. But anyway, props and flops this week are brought to you by Switch Cars, Doug. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy.
Hold on. We got a great closing line to that. This is Allstate after all, right?
Yes.
With Allstate, you're not in good hands, right?
Your data is, though.
Or yeah.
Well, not good. It's in hands. And they're going to do something with them.
You're in their hands, whether you like it or not.
Oh, so okay, we ready for the transition now? Is this awkward? Should I call it out?
They should rename their company to All States Except Texas.
We're not issuing any new policies in the state of Texas. Why? Because we got caught.
So we got to have the lines. We got to have the lines. All right.
So good.
Props and flops.
Brought to you by Switch Cars. As you know, Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in the North Pole, beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio.
-8 tonight. -8.
Whew. Rough. Alrighty, Doug. Do we have a pick of the week from Switch Cars Inventory?
2015 Jaguar F-Type R. Supercharged V8. 42,000 miles. Black on black on black. Yeah, it's black wheels. That's right. Triple black, as they say. $38,000. A great sports car for very reasonable price.
F-Types are so good looking. I really like them. I don't think I'd ever own one, but I really like them.
The convertibles are my favorite.
So
the
good.
The coupes are growing off of me. I don't really find them as impressive as I used to. I think the convertibles have a better line.
Nice.
But, yeah.
Nice.
Flop of the week. We got a couple here. As you may have seen around Instagram and TikTok and all the social media, there was not one but two Ferrari F40s crashed over in Europe this week. One of them was owned by Lando Norris, allegedly being driven by his friend, got into boost, spun it out, backed it into a guardrail, very minor damage. The other one was being driven, this was confirmed, it was being driven by a mechanic, and it was rainy and wet out.
Oh.
Again, got into boost, then came off throttle. The car went sideways into the berm, flipped over. Looks like it's probably totaled, although at, you know, $3 to $4 million that they're worth right now, I'm sure they'll take the VIN number and send it to Ferrari and say, please build us another one.
Just get glued onto a new car.
Yes, exactly. So unfortunately, it seems like an all too common occurrence that we see cars wrecked by mechanics on test drives. I think just recently we were covering one in a dealership in Connecticut that was getting sued for this. And
yeah, I think so.
It's pretty crazy. Man, if you're working on a car, you don't need to hoon it to see if your repairs worked unless you're trying to repair the boost.
It's like there is
the boost.
I was gonna let you have that. Well, so
it's a turbo, you know, wastegate. There's a lot of things encompassed.
My
in
boost
that,
is
know.
Broken. Fix it.
Shut up.
You know, it's really, and there is a like technical service guide. It's not the big books of service instructions for the Carrera GT, but it's like a thinner technical service instructions book or whatever. And at the very beginning, it says in like bold letters, under no circumstances will the traction control ever be off during a test drive. Like, for as instructing the mechanics that you never turn this off if you're test driving.
Is there traction control on a Carrera GT?
I'm pretty sure there is.
But not stability control, just traction control.
I think so.
Okay.
But
I know
it's kind of funny.
Not stability
like
control. There's not even stability control on an 0708 GT3.
I don't think there is on the 996s either, then. I don't even think there's traction control on those.
The last like PASM
or whatever. But yeah, it's kind of funny that in a Porsche printed document, this official thing, it says, don't do this.
It's not PASM, it's PISM.
PISM?
PASM is Porsche Active Suspension Management.
Oh.
PISM is Porsche Stability Management.
I just have PISM.
Yeah.
And then my sad PISM.
Yeah, it's PSM. And then PMS is... so the prop of the week...
Wait, do we do the other flop?
Oh, no. I don't know.
You get the only one.
Okay, well, Elon Musk donated a bunch of Cybertrucks to LA fire departments in order to help with their power supply, which I thought was odd because I'm like, well, but they last like 3 days. I think they said they can power a house for 3 days. And I'm like, so you donate a battery that needs recharge to help with somebody's power supply. Like, nice move for publicity, but...
Wouldn't a generator be more effective?
Yes, I have a $7,000 generator at my shop that can power it indefinitely.
Yeah.
Because it's hooked up to gas lines. I have a $600 generator in my garage. As long as I keep filling it with gas, it'll go as well.
Yeah, this just feels like publicity.
$100,000 generator that lasts 3 days.
And then where are they going to plug it in if they're having power problems?
Right. I'm not trying to poke fun at all that is going on out there. It is an awful tragedy what is happening.
Truly.
And we pay our respects to those who have lost loved ones and property and stuff like that. So again, that is not trying to poke fun at that at all. It was an interesting news story in the middle of this that got Tesla some publicity, and I thought it was a little bit ironic. So, prop of the week. Our executive producer, Ethan, is about to be the executive of his new domicile, no. Domestic situation.
Whoa.
That's an odd way to word it.
Well, yeah, you know, patriarchal. Right?
Just say that I got engaged.
Yeah, you got engaged.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You believe in traditional gender roles, right?
Oh, right, boy. Ethan.
Goodness gracious.
All right, thank you for watching or listening to Switchcast, everybody.
No, there's a real one.
That wasn't a real one?
I mean, it is a real one, but there's also a real one. Okay. This Look might be a Doug. Whole episode.
I am the host now.
Okay. Last week we talked about low mileage cars, how they're, well, I'm just over them. Well, in Perfect Timing, Car and Driver had an article highlighting this guy, Kevin Enderby, who has three Ferraris that all have more than 200,000 miles. He has a Ferrari F430, a 355, and a 308 that he's put over 200,000 miles on each one of them. He said he's not added up the service receipts like we have.
Yeah, you just don't even need to know.
He said it's probably in the millions of dollars. He's got stacks and stacks. But this dude is my hero. The ironic part is he also judges Concours. So he goes to Concours and like tells people whether or not their cars are perfect. But then he drives a snot out of his and also shows them at Ferrari Concours. So
that's
anyway.
Amazing.
This guy is, I want to buy him a beer, but he probably doesn't drink because he's spending so much time driving his cars. Like, he never have time to get the alcohol out of his system.
Related, there's currently an 06 Aston Martin DB9 convertible for sale with 177,000 miles on it.
I know. We talked about that last
week.
Did
we? Oh, my God.
It's Atlanta Fine Cars.
I need to lay off the
Atlanta
sauce.
Atlanta Not So Fine Cars based on their reviews. There it is. There it is. And on that note, thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.